Hey, Twitter world, this is yours truly. Now, coming soon to Twitter, you'll get to read all my thoughts and opinions on just about everything. Now, there's a lot of fake OJ accounts out there, so this one, at the real OJ32, is the only official one. So, this should be a lot of fun. I got a little getting even to do. So, God bless. Take care.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
He's back. After almost a decade in jail, the man who was truly the last monoculturally famous person has returned to us. And it's nothing short of miraculous.
That's legit not funny.
It is funny. And not only is it funny, it's educational. There's a fuck ton we can learn from O.J. Simpson. Yeah, the title of this episode is O.J., Your Go-To Guru. And am I kidding? No. Murderer or not, the guy is bulletproof. Unsinkable, unflappable. He makes Tony Robbins look like an introverted, depressed, neurotic. I've studied OJ for a long time, and I have distilled the elements of OJ that can help anyone live a richer, fuller, guilt-free life. Like how to maintain a PMA, that's positive mental attitude. How to laugh in the face of disaster. How to score the hottest chicks, even if you may have already beheaded one. How to stay in peak condition, regardless of age. How to fortify your self-esteem so that no person, place, or thing can take you down. Wouldn't you like to learn those secrets and master those arts?
I would love to.
Of course you would, and you will, in this very show. So hang with me for a bit before we can get there. We need to lay some groundwork so it all makes sense. So OJ has decided to step back into the public eye through Twitter. And as of this recording, he's got well over 700,000 followers, of which I am one. His page has been up for just a week or two, and he's only pumped out 4 tweets. The first was the one that opened the show. And my favorite line is,
I got a little getting even to do.
Who can't relate to that? Especially since this show is recorded at the Take No Shit Dojo, where we actually try to be a little more proactive than OJ. Taking no shit at the outset of a situation kind of negates the need for getting even. But still, there's nothing wrong with settling old scores. There may be some out there who are thinking,
how is that funny?
As Woody Allen said, tragedy plus time equals comedy. And it's been a quarter century since the juice was accused and acquitted in a criminal court and then accused and convicted in a civil court of double homicide. And unless you were not yet extant at that time, it's impossible to overstate the impact OJ had on this nation. There will never, ever again be a criminal celebrity as big as OJ. It cannot happen. Why? Because of the way the media landscape has changed since he set the bar back in the mid-90s. There will never, ever be a media circus as big as OJ's because he was the last mega celeb of the pre-digital age. Eggheads are calling that kind of fame monoculture. If you're alive, then you're aware. That would apply to, what, Sinatra, Elvis, the Beatles, World Wars, and Hitler and Stalin and Mao and the atomic bomb. Everything else is kind of second tier or below. And OJ was never second tier anything. At the time of OJ, there were only 3 big networks, plus CNN, and Fox was not all that old. And for months and months and months, commercial TV, newspapers, and radio stations were all OJ all the time. There was no YouTube, no Netflix, no Hulu, Spotify, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. There might have been a podcast or two, I don't know, but basically, unless you were unconscious, you were seeing and hearing OJ on a daily basis. There was no escape. So just as there will never, ever be a TV show with the gigantic audience of, I don't know, a MASH or a Seinfeld. There will never, ever be a celeb as hot as OJ was in the mid-90s. Now there are simply too many choices. And Andy Warhol's prediction has come true. Everyone is famous for 15 minutes. OJ was an industry. He was better for the economy than a war. Legions of truck drivers and reporters and cameramen and editors and food trucks and writers and makeup artists and hotel maids and all. The ripple effect of OJ is very hard to calculate. Just before OJ, Los Angeles had been knocked on its ass by back-to-back brush fires, horrible riots, and a devastating earthquake. The city's economy had flatlined. The value of real estate imploded. There was a mass exodus from L.A. by citizens and businesses. It was fucked. OJ fixed that. He put L.A. back on the tourist map, better than free admission to Disneyland. People were terrified to visit L.A. They would either be killed in a riot or killed in an earthquake. But nobody was worried about O.J. killing them. Everyone knew in their hearts that O.J. probably was that great guy from the Hertz commercials and Naked Gun movies. Maybe he just got really, really pissed, sort of lost his shit and went berserk. Maybe. Regardless, it's not like he was any threat to the general public. But I'm getting ahead of myself. At the time of the murders for which OJ is still searching for the perpetrators, I might add, my offices were high above Wilshire Boulevard, about a 10-minute walk from the crime scene. Of course, I was curious, so within a day or so, a friend of mine and I walked over to the famed condo. When we arrived, we thought we had the wrong address. I was expecting at least a few cops or some yellow police tape wound around the fence and hedges, but there was nothing. Only when I looked down at the Mexican tile and saw the dried blood did I know we were in the right place. I thought that was odd. Very odd. As it happened, OJ was pretty chummy with LAPD. They'd been called to his mansion nearby in Brentwood on more than one occasion when his now dead ex-wife had called him saying she thought he was going to kill her. But they let him slide. After the murders, however, the evidence seemed to point rather convincingly to the juice.
A sample of blood matching the type of O.J. Simpson's was found in his ex-wife's driveway and inside his Ford Bronco. A blood-soaked glove and ski mask were uncovered inside O.J. Simpson's mansion. And in Chicago, what appeared to be bloodstains were found on two pillowcases and on a bloodied towel in O.J.'s hotel room.
His attorneys arranged a surrender, and that's when O.J. made the greatest run of his life. Not on a football field, but in that white Bronco, with his football buddy A.C. Cowlings at the wheel. It lasted over an hour and was watched by an estimated 95 million people. Thousands and thousands of gawkers and fans raced to the freeway ramps and overpasses to cheer on O.J. They had handmade posters they held up and waved as he rolled by in the SUV. For much of the chase, which was never very fast at all, it was more like a cop parade with O.J. as the Grand Marshal. He was in the back of the car with a revolver to his own head as some cop tried to talk him out of blowing his brains out.
Please, you're scaring everybody, though. You're scaring them.
Just tell them I'm all sorry. You can tell them later on today in the morning I was sorry. I'm sorry that I did this to the police department.
Listen, I think you should tell them yourself. Uh-huh. And I don't want to have to tell your kids that. Your kids need you.
I already said goodbye to my kids.
The pursuit ended in the driveway of O.J.'s mansion. He eventually put the gun down and was taken into custody. Every channel carried it live, but setting the tone for the entire comedic circus that is still in progress today was a Howard Stern fan doing a prank call. One of Howard's sidekicks, Gary Delabate, had long been nicknamed Bob Bob Bowie, and this prank caller managed to get through to ABC News anchor Peter Jennings live from New York and convinced Jennings that he was at the scene at O.J.'s mansion. It was arguably the best prank call in history and inarguably the most widely heard prank call of all time.
Did you hear anything, Mr. Higgins?
It's just too much commotion. I'd be in the back of a news van, so I can't really hear that good, but I can see it all. And I see O.J. I see O.J., man, and he looks scared. And I would be scared because there's cops all deep in this.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins.
And baba booey to y'all.
I had just flown into New York when O.J. made his run to the sun. It had been a hell of a bumpy ride. And when I started my rental car, I could not understand why I was listening to a Los Angeles news radio station while sitting in a Hertz lot at JFK. But the story was so hot, they were taking the local L.A. radio feed all over the country. Only 911 was a bigger story. But that was all bad. Aside from the murders, the O.J. story was pure comedy, from slapstick to farce. O.J. launched dozens, if not hundreds, of careers, most notably the Kardashians. His attorney and friend, Bobby Kardashian, patriarch of that clan, was a central figure in the trial. Sure, Kim got famous for her sex tape, but if not for O.J., no one would have given a shit about her tape. O.J. launched the Kardashian empire. His lawyers became known as the Dream Team, or the Scheme Team, depending on your allegiances. Bob Shapiro, Johnny Cochran, F. Lee Bailey, Howard Weitz, Bobby Kardashian, and Alan Dershowitz. The thing was Hollywood on steroids. Anybody with even a hamster brain knew it would be the trial of the century. Only in retrospect can we now see it was the trial of all centuries. And so everyone wanted to play a part, to grab a hunk of fame, to up their Q scores, to be a part of it. Even the judge was a shameless grandstander. His name was Lance Ito, and it wasn't enough to just preside over a globally televised trial of one of the most famous defendants on earth. Ito had to draw even more attention to himself by planting hourglasses all over the bench. It was bizarre. Contrary to the Woody Allen axiom I mentioned earlier in the show, SNL didn't give a shit. They did a cold opening about the O.J. trial with a caliber of comics not seen since the 90s, Chris Farley, Kevin Nealon, and I think Mike Myers playing Judge Ito. Here's a clip.
I will allow the 911 call in which Nicole Simpson screams, "He's going to kill me." But I will not allow the call where she screams, "He's going to kill me and Ron Goldman on June 12th outside my condo."
And so the trial went on and on. I still can't fathom how O.J., even with his wealth, shouldered the legal bills. But I guess he did. Even then, attorneys of that caliber were probably making a grand an hour. And then all the ancillary shit, putting them up in hotels and meals, and oh my God, it's staggering. A lot of people say there's an O.J. curse. And a lot of his sidemen croaked younger than they should have. Johnny Cochran was my favorite. He coined the phrase,
"If it doesn't fit, you must acquit."
He was really goddamn funny in his defense of O.J. He put on this ridiculous knit cap in the courtroom, which the prosecution said O.J. used as a disguise during the murders. The look of Johnny with that cap above a $5,000 suit was high comedy. Anyway, Johnny got himself a nasty brain tumor that took him out in 05. He was only 67. Bobby Kardashian died of cancer in 03. He was only 59. Remember Kato Kaelin? That spaced-out goof with a flock of seagulls' hair? Everyone knew his name back then. There was talk of book deals and movie deals, and he's done some TV guest bits and reality TV, but that's about it. Marsha Clark and Chris Darden were the prosecuting attorneys. I think they both got book deals. Clark's was for seven figures. But they got their asses kicked by the Scheme Team. And America does tend to prefer winners. Mark Furman, the cop who found the infamous bloody glove, took a fall for perjury and some bigoted comments. But he still had a best-selling book and was the go-to cop guest for news shows for a long time. Another casualty of the O.J. curse was the publishing phenomenon Judith Regan. She had a knack for finding bestsellers, and she wasn't bad-looking and had a sexy take-no-shit attitude. She hosted talk shows and had her own imprint at HarperCollins and honchoed bestsellers by Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh. Then, she made a deal with O.J. He had a book entitled, If I Did It. And boom, Judith's career imploded. She was fired, excoriated by damn near everyone. She sued and won $10 million from Fox and now hosts shows on Sirius. But the O.J. curse definitely put the brakes on her career. The most mind-boggling story is that of F. Lee Bailey. Now that dude was, for decades, the absolute indisputable poster boy for big-time successful attorneys. Not only was he sick rich, with multiple mansions, a private jet, a helicopter pad on rails to pull it into the hangar, not only had he defended the Boston Strangler, Sam Shepard, and Patty Hearst, F. Lee Bailey looked and talked like some actor portraying an uber-successful criminal attorney. The guy had the right stuff. He checked every box with a chisel-tip Sharpie. Where is Bailey now? He's 87 years old, disbarred, bankrupt, and working above a hair salon in some little town in Maine. Holy shit. Apparently Bailey got his ass in a jam and some things unrelated to O.J., but when I read that as I researched this episode, the Bailey story blew my mind more than anyone's. So why should O.J. be your go-to guru? He's the living embodiment of that old song from the 80s, Ain't Nothing Gonna Break My Stride, Nobody Gonna Slow Me Down. Everybody knows somebody who's committed suicide, and O.J. had way more valid reasons than most people who off themselves. What the fuck is his secret? Is he a sociopath? Probably, but if he is, he's one goddamn happy-go-lucky one. There are some people who are able to enjoy life no matter what, and they are not double murderers. And it appears O.J. embraces the same recipes for fulfillment that other chronically happy people do. Here they are. 1. O.J. looks good. Always has. His teeth are white and strong and straight. He's 72 years old. He looks to be in better shape than most guys half his age. Clearly, O.J. maintains his physical self. I'll betcha he's a frequent gym goer and doesn't miss any dental appointments. 2. O.J. likes O.J. You can see it in the way he carries himself, in the way he looks, talks, walks. The guy exudes confidence and charm. O.J. might be a prick, but he neither talks nor acts like a prick. He's very easy to like. So no matter how much shit was raining down on him, he never copped an attitude, got sulky or combative. Well, other than maybe on that night of July 12, 1994, but nobody's perfect. 3. As a Crippled Jesus at the Crippled Jesus podcast wisely suggested to those who suffer from depression, find something you like to do and do it a lot, whatever the hell it is. Crippled Jesus is a poker and football buff. While he's not playing any football, he apparently really digs the game and that keeps his spirits high. By the way, I'm supposed to do a guest shot on his show soon. Follow my show on Twitter at ThatLarryShow and I'll give you a heads up. Should be fun. Now, O.J. is not crippled, but O.J. does what makes O.J. smile. He's on Twitter and he's talking football and getting even. What a surprise. He also plays a shitload of golf. So many of us punish ourselves simply by denying ourselves pleasures that are really therapeutic. Why do we do that? 4. In my observation of OJ, I've noticed he frequently uses the phrase, God bless. He may already have one foot in hell, but it's a safe bet. He believes in that higher power. Maybe he's asked forgiveness from the boss in the sky and figures if he did 9 years in a Nevada prison, he can hack a similar pull in purgatory. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Come back and see me this weekend for Sinner's Sunday. Bounce over to thatlarryshow.com for more comment and commentary. I'll have some videos there for you on OJ. And while at the show page, click that Patreon button if you want to support the show. Oh, and click one of those subscribe buttons, Stitcher, iTunes, Android, doesn't matter. That way you never miss an episode. So my friends, take those 4 tips from the juice. Stay in shape. Like yourself, which is a lot easier when you feel and look good. Do stuff that brings you joy. And say hello to the man upstairs once in a while.
I would love to.
It can't hurt. I'll see you in a few days. And until then, take no shit.